Gerald, I've decided in honor of the Fall Guy tonight, I will not be doing my own stunts. And instead, I got star of stage and screen, Mr. Christian Bale, to take over for me.
Oh, good for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It's another episode of Two Peas on a Podcast, where we review the latest and sometimes greatest movies every week. Gerald is here with you, of course, and on the other side is my stunt double, Nicholas. How are you, my friend?
I just want everybody to know on the video version of this, audio version is not going to get the spoil, but Gerald sent me a GIF of a shirtless Ryan Gosling in order to apparently get ready for this. I don't know.
Yep.
I just wanted to make sure I shared that. I shared that with everybody. What's up, brother?
So dreamy, man. Gosling is, I mean, we'll talk about it. You as well. Yeah, of course, okay. You. I mean, that's a given. I'm good, man. We're going to get into the show proper, but before we do, because we are on the brink of live stream for The Cure 8. Like, it is literally, I think, as we're sitting here, maybe 3 weeks away. So I know you want to pump it up. I know you want to talk about it. Any new listeners, we do live stream for The Cure every year to benefit cancer research. Nick, tell them about it. Tell them the dates. Let them know how it's all going to go down this year, man, before we get into the show here.
Yeah, go to livestreamforthecure.com. Check out all the links. You can make early donations now. You can pick up merch now. May 29th through June 1st. Going to be live 12 hours each day doing Lord knows what. There's always amazing creators like Mr. G Money Morris himself here is going to be doing some peas centric stuff. I guess I'll probably.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I'm at. What about I'm on Saturday night this year, I think. Right?
I don't know. So I don't remember.
I don't know either. I think I am, but I got to come up with a good top five, and I might incorporate Logan somehow, my son, because he's really been wanted to be a part of it the last few years, and we haven't really been able to do anything appropriate for him.
Dope.
So
that'd be dope.
Yeah,
let him come up with the top five. If you want to incorporate him, let him come up with it. You know, yeah, that'd be super cool.
I think I will. I was thinking like father-son moments in movies or something stupid. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Yeah, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man.
That'd be super, super cool. But yeah, we 100% of proceeds go to the Cancer Research Institute, immunotherapy research, training your body's immune system to fight against all forms of cancer. This is the 8th year that I've been doing live stream. This is G-Money's, I don't know how long ago you jumped on board. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been doing it for a long time now, and we're aiming to raise $25,000. So save your pennies, come on out, and make sure, we did it last year, and it was a huge hit. Everybody loved it, but during the event itself, there's going to be another exclusive Gerald t-shirt that you can buy with artwork from Phil Rude. If you loved the alien chestburster Gerald from last year,
my God,
Phil's outdone himself, I promise you. I've already seen it. It is glorious. So save your money. $25,000 we're trying to raise. So, you know, share. A lot of people always ask how they can help. Help us promote the event. Help us reach as many people as we possibly can. As many eyes and as many wallets or purses or Gerald's little satchel, like fanny pack he carries his coins in.
You say, you know, people ask how they can help. I mean, I'm going to the links, brother, because I'm posing nude with a microphone covering my junk to be drawn like Kate Winslet from Titanic. That's what Phil Rude did the first year. Last year, he did Chestburster from Alien. I don't think I'm ready for whatever he did this year. I don't know.
It is glorious, ladies and gentlemen. So, yeah, please come out. Again, livestreamforthecure.com. The whole event we streamed live over on Twitch. And 100% of the proceeds for all the merch, for everything, 100% goes to the Cancer Research Institute for a world immune to cancer, which is something I think that's really, really worth fighting about. So you're going to hear us talk more about it in the coming weeks as we get close to the event. Gerald will be there. We're going to make Dan be there, just to produce the event behind the scenes, like he always does. And going to have a lot of great content creators, podcasters, friends of the show, friends in the community. It's going to be amazing.
I'm looking forward to it. So check the show notes, guys. Dan, I'm assuming, is dropping that in all the show notes going forward in the next month or so. But
thanks, Dan.
Make sure you visit livestreamforthecure.com, right, Nick? It's .com.
That's right. And you can see, I mean, Gerald's got the year 3 and the year 6 sticker. I can see behind him right there.
Yep.
In my thing here, I don't know if you've got any other. Oh, there's the year four. When I see it there, it's a cropped version on the screen right now, so I can't see all of them that you have there.
Yeah, I have a couple. I have a couple on my fridge as well.
That's right. I got to get those done too. I got all this stuff.
Be ready for that, guys. Give them the dates one more time, Nick.
May 29th, June 1st, ladies and gentlemen. Come on out and join us to help fight for a world immune to cancer. Help us fight cancer. Help us fight for a good cause.
Yep, absolutely. It's a great event, and I'm looking forward to being a part of it. I think this will be my sixth year being a part of it, and I'm very excited to help once again this year. We'll come up with a great segment. I'll get Logan on board, and we'll have a good time. So
Logan gets to pick it, period. Yeah. That's
a good idea. I'm actually going to let him do it. Yeah,
Logan pick the top five.
Will do. All right, so check the show notes for all that information on live stream for The Cure, guys. Nick, I know you care about that. I know that's you're very passionate about that. That's something that you take very seriously. However, a close runner-up is probably entertainment news. So there's a few things I wanted to ask you about this week to see how much you care as we spill the peas this week.
Oh, no, not the peas! Not the peas! I still don't know if I ever. I don't know if I ever sent that to Dan. I really should. I don't know if he wants the clean version or not.
You got to drop that to him. But since Nicolas Cage generously let us in there with our spill the peas,
that was me. That was me.
I
know,
but it was so real though. I just felt like it was Nicolas Cage.
I mean, you thought I got him. I mean, I don't know. We can need some more patrons to get some more budget for Nicolas Cage in here.
Well, how about this for the first story? I'm going to ask you about now. I poke fun at you and you poke fun at me when it comes to the horror genre. How about this, though? Nicolas Cage is going to be starring in a horror movie that is going to be centered around Jesus's childhood. All right, so let me give you the headline here. Nicolas Cage is set to star in the upcoming horror film, The Carpenter's Son. The film is based on the infancy gospel of Thomas and explores the rarely told story of Jesus's childhood with a unique horror twist. It will begin filming this summer. The announcement has generated significant buzz, and there's users are expressing a mix of excitement and curiosity around this unconventional take on the biblical figure's early years.
That sounds like an AI blurb that you just read, whatever that was.
It may have been. I don't know. First of all, do you care?
I mean, it's Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage is always worth getting out of bed for. Always worth. He stars in some really like weird, wacky, off the wall project. Now he's not going to be Jesus unless they're going to CGI like Nicolas Cage into like a young boy or something. So I don't know. I don't know who's Nicolas Cage going to play in the movie. Will he be like Joseph?
I was going to say maybe Joseph or
will he be a random apostle or something like that? Will they just like get him to play God and like, you know, they got to have somebody in the movie. Oh, wow. That's God.
That'd be, you know? Yeah, that'd be something. Obviously, I'm thrilled for this. Anytime horror. Yes. Nicolas Cage in horror. Yes. Yes. But then you're also doing this, like it said, this rarely told version of Jesus's story. I don't know. As a horror movie, I mean, it's obviously people are going to say it's sacrilegious, and I could see the picket signs outside the theaters now, but I'll be seated for it, brother. I'm excited for anything Nicolas Cage does, especially in the realm of horror. Nick, I break your balls because you, for some reason, love Man of Steel, Batman v Superman.
10 out of 10, 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Zack Snyder's Justice League, another 10 out of 10. Yeah, go ahead. Throw
10 out of 100, is that what he said? He said 10 out of 100. That's pretty close.
Did not do that.
David Corenswet is the new Superman, which, of course, was announced a few months ago. And the first image was released actually today as we're recording of him in the Superman costume, which is a new version of that suit. I just want to ask you, this is obviously for audio audience. They won't know. For the video audience, I'll throw up an image of it. But what do you think of the image that came out today?
I mean, Superman is my favorite superhero, so I care a lot. I'll always care when it comes to Superman, no matter what it is. This image looks dope as hell. Cord Sweat definitely looks the part. Now, I am not a gun fan at all. Like, I hated the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. I didn't ever see the third one, but I mean, it's probably more of the same trash the first two were. So, you know, I'm not a gun fan at all. So I really, really am very hesitant. You know, thinking about, you know, him at behind the helm, but in terms of, you know, casting the right dude with the right look, looks absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely looks the part. And I mean, I'm just more curious about whatever that crazy like energy explosion thing going on behind him is.
He seems chill. Yeah. Whatever it is, he doesn't seem too rattled. He's like,
oh God, I gotta go. Something's blown up Metropolis again. I better get the boots on. All right,
let me put my shoes on. Yeah, Jesus, I just got home, guys. Yeah, he definitely looks the part. I mean, they nailed it when it comes to the casting here.
He got jacked too. He got jacked, man.
Yeah, I saw some images of him like in the gym or whatever. Not this one, but I mean, him working out for the role and stuff. I mean, the dude is jacked to the tilt. But I love they brought back the red briefs over the suit, which was not something that Cavill had. So I'm excited about that because that kind of harkens back to the Christopher Reeve days with the red undies on top of the thing. People don't do that.
Most pointlessly stupid argument literally ever.
No,
I'm all about absolutely, it. Absolutely hate it. Team, it's so stupid. I'm team Who red cares? Undies. It does I'm not team matter. Red undies. You know what makes him Superman? The way he acts and the S shield on his chest and the cape. Whether or not he has red underwear doesn't mean a damn thing.
You know what it is? He was in a hurry to save Metropolis. He was getting dressed, and he's like, oh, shit, I forgot to put my underwear on. I'm just going to put them on over these pants. Nobody will notice. And then it's a thing, you know, for 100 years. So
God help me.
I'm excited, though. Now, since we're talking about DC, and you were just saying you're not really a fan of James Gunn, how about this? I don't know if you've heard about this. It just came out, I think, yesterday or maybe even today. But they did an interview with Chris Pine, who has been in the Wonder Woman films and obviously one of the Hollywood's A-listers. So they were talking to him, and it turns out that he is stunned because the Gal Gadot Wonder Woman is not going to be a part of Gunn's DC universe. He is scrapping the entire Wonder Woman connection and starting fresh. It says here that Wonder Woman 3 is going to happen. But James Gunn and Peter Safran, as a part of a broader shift away from the billion-dollar franchise led by Gal, and despite that franchise's success, she and that movie will not be a part of the new DC universe. What do you think? I mean, is this a clean break? Is that the right thing to do? I mean, because these movies were extremely successful for DC, especially when looking at some of the other properties over the last 5 or 10 years. What do you think about this decision of kind of just everything's gone, we're starting brand new?
I mean, in terms of franchise building, you have to. You can't have anything that's still tied to the old franchise. And listen, people can, I mean, I think she's really well cast in the role. That said, Wonder Woman 2 or Wonder Woman 84 was a train wreck. That movie was so bad. Like the scene of her like rolling with that weird like doll looking thing that's supposed to be like a kid, like tumbling, has been replayed endlessly, like on GIF loops and stuff like that. Like the fact that a major like blockbuster, I mean, granted, it was a COVID movie and all those sorts of things. Although I still defend ardently Pedro Pascal in that movie. He's trying to be like an over the top 80s infomercial dude and he nails it. And I don't get why people have a problem with his like super scenery chewing badassness.
I thought he was good too. Yeah.
He's so good in it. Like that's exactly what he's meant to be, is ridiculously over the top. He's an infomercial pitch man. Like, yeah, but like that movie was utterly terrible. Like it was so bad. Like, so if you want to wash the taste of that garbage out of my mouth, like I'm perfectly fine with it.
I think people are up in arms because of the success of those films and the, you know, the women empowerment and Gal's kind of impact in the DC and in comic book movies overall in the last like 10 years. But I'm kind of with you where, whether you like James Gunn or not, if he's starting this new kind of chapter, you have to move on. I mean,
it's not like they're saying we're never making another Wonder Woman movie again. Right. You can still have another Wonder Woman movie. You could still get another female director to do it.
Right.
You know, that's the silliest thing in the world to be up in arms about if people are up in arms about that.
So this is going to be the last one I'm going to mention, which is going to segue us a little bit into our conversation tonight. But I am quoting from Scott Mance's Twitter account. He's a SAG-AFTRA member, and he tweeted this out yesterday. After heavy promotion, earning rave reviews when it premiered at South by Southwest, and Ryan Gosling stealing the Oscars, The Fall Guy is still a disappointing showing. It cost $130 million to make this movie, and it only made a little shy of $28 million this opening week. And I know you and I went to see it. We're about to talk about it in depth. Now, I kind of got into a thing on this Twitter post and went back and forth with a couple other people that I don't know, which I'm not like super passionate one way or the other. I just want to ask you and have a little bit of a discussion here for a couple minutes. Where do you think the marquee name movie star is today? Because in my opinion, if Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt doing a bombastic blockbuster action movie can't bring people out to the cinema, what's the disconnect? Why didn't this perform a little bit better?
I mean, we're going to talk a lot more about it when we get into the actual movie itself, but this movie was terribly marketed. Absolutely terrible. The trailers for this movie, like, I don't want to really get into our thoughts about the movie until we get into the movie itself. Yeah, but
I agree.
But the trailers for this movie did not at all prepare me for what this movie is. And I think that's an extraordinary disservice to what this movie ends up being. And it really, I mean, Gosling's charm and everything like that aside, it really looks like a very, very generic action comedy. Mm-hmm. And the trailers for this movie are not good. Like, I'm sorry, but they're not good. And people don't like largely, like, sometimes maybe a little bit of star power will get people's butts in seats, you know. But I mean, by and large, it's got to look interesting. There's so many different options out there to pull people's attentions. I will be the person that talks about this endlessly as well. But there's also the factor of people going to theaters. I go to theaters all the time to watch movies for this show and things like that. And I'm bombarded by 30 minutes of the same trailers and commercials every time before. So I got to, now granted, my theater's close, but imagine you're somebody who lives 20, 25 minutes away from a theater. You got to drive all the way to the theater. You got to stand in line in order to get snacks or a drink or whatever you want. Then you got to sit down in the theater. If you're somebody that likes to get there ahead of time, then you got to sit there for 25 minutes, 30 minutes of trailers and commercials. They're always the same ones. And then you have to watch the movie, and then you got to drive. So it's an investment in money, number one. And I think the bigger problem is it's an investment in time. When nowadays you can click on a streaming service, you can wait. Mm-hmm. You can wait literally 2 weeks for most of these movies, 2 weeks to four weeks. Click on a streamer. You don't have to leave your house, and you don't have to sit through the bombardment of trailers and advertisements that theaters throw at you. And a lot of times, like, let's face it. Now, granted, my showing of The Fall Guys this afternoon was empty. I'm pretty sure I was the only person in the theater. I don't know if anybody else walked in, because I like to sit in, like, the first row of the front section. So if anybody filtered in behind me after I came in. But I've developed a tactic where I now show up to the theater. I leave my house when the showing starts, because by the time I get to the theater, get through the line to get a bottle of water and get in and get my seat, I've still got 15 minutes before the stupid movie starts playing past its the start time. Like, that's how ridiculous it is. These theaters are stealing time from people. And like, it's so much easier if you're somebody like, oh man, that movie with Ryan Gosling looks really cool. Yeah, I'll wait a couple weeks until it's on streaming or whatever and catch it then.
Yeah, first thing I want to ask is, how do you think I felt when I drove to Detroit to see Love Lies Bleeding? drove all the way out there. And then, what I want to say about the streaming part, though, is that part of it kind of bothers me, though, because I feel like the Hollywood community, the producers, the studios, whatever, are kind of giving in to the shift away from cinema. And I don't think it's necessarily going to happen in our lifetimes. But it makes me concerned for, like, my kids and my grandkids' theater-going experiences and event movies and that kind of thing. Because what I wanted to bring up is that this is opening weekend for The Fall Guy. It just came out on Friday. As we're recording, it's only been out 3 days. And they already announced when it's going to be streaming, which is the July 4th week. Mm-hmm. So for July 4th, it's going to be on streaming services, VOD. I mean, it'll probably be $20 or whatever, but you'll be able to stream it at home. Yep. A subset I wanted to mention about that, there's a horror movie called Abigail that just came out that I really liked. It came out on April 11th, I think, April 11th. It's going to be streaming this Friday on, like, May the 7th. So not even a month from its opening day, and it's still playing in theaters. So Well, I mean, of course we don't know, but what do you think is in Hollywood's mind? Have they just not been able to adjust since COVID, or are they shifting us away from the movie houses?
What Hollywood needs to do, if they want people to go to the theater, you have to cater and you have to improve the guest experience at the theater. Now, what I mean by that is, like, and I'm not talking to you people that live in your big markets with your Alamo draft houses where you can go and you can sit down and you can have food and beer and all that stuff mm-hmm. delivered to your seat, and where they throw people out if they open their phone or talk during the movie. Okay.
Right.
You don't know how good you have it. Okay. Because mm-hmm. most of the rest of us that are in crappy markets like me, I got like an art theater that I am too tall to fit in the seats for comfortably. It's really uncomfortable to go to the art theater. It's great that it's there. It's great that it's an option. And if it's something I really want to see, I will patronize it. But like, they are seats that were built in literally probably like the 60s or 70s, and mm-hmm. they're really cramped and uncomfortable. And the only other option I have within an hour's drive of me is a Regal that it's 30 minutes. And the older I get, like, maybe for younger people, this isn't as much of a thing, but the older I get, the more cognizant I am of how much time I'm spending doing nothing and wasting my time mm-hmm. and sitting in a theater and being bombarded by this. And that's, like I said, that's the thing. Like, it's gotten so much worse over the years, where like theaters, because less people are going to the theater now. So now what the theaters have done is they've started playing more advertisements and more trailers in front of movies to get more money. Mm-hmm. And in what they're doing is they're alienating even people that are diehard for that experience. Like me, I love the theatrical experience. In my opinion, it cannot be replaced,
mm-hmm.
but my time is more valuable to me than the theatrical experience. If I can wait a couple weeks and not have the inconvenience of having to be bombarded by trailers and all that stuff. And like I said, I'm lucky. My theater, it takes me like 3 minutes to drive to my movie theater from here. It's right mm-hmm. down the road from me. I don't have to drive a long way. Like, imagine you're somebody that's 20, 25 minutes away. You know, mm-hmm. like I used to be when I was younger, I used to have to drive like 20, 25, 30 minutes just to go to the movie. So it was only a once in a great while. Like, it had to be something like an event movie. You got to make it like, they've got to work with theatrical presenters. They've got to work with these dead ass companies like Regal, like AMC, that do nothing for the guest experience, like literally nothing, you know, mm-hmm. like, and I know all the snacks and drinks and everything like that are overpriced. And I'm sorry, I'm on a soapbox about it here, but that's like okay. what they have to charge in order to stay open. You know, like, that's why the drinks and all that stuff are so expensive. But like, that you've got to do more. You've got to do something more to cater to the guest experience, because what are you going to give that guest that they can't get at home on their couch besides a bigger screen and a louder sound? What else are right. you giving them? That's the right. thing.
And, you know, if you rewind even 5 years ago, mm-hmm. if not sooner in time, movies would come out. And I, you know, like a movie like The Fall Guy, for example, a movie like The Fall Guy would come out and you wouldn't be able to rent that movie at home. Or if I'm dating myself, at like a Blockbuster back in the old days, for like 6 months. I mean, it would be, you would have to see it in the movie theater, or you would have to be okay with waiting multiple months to see it. So that's gone, because
I think that might play like a little bit. I don't think that plays into it nearly as much as some people think it does. I really think it's the loss of the guest experience. And
yeah.
Like, I think it's more like you go to these theaters, like some people have it even worse than I do. Like, you go to theaters that are crowded with people that are just always on their phones and just like constantly talking to people, constantly yeah. making it a disruptive environment. Like, why yeah. bother sitting through that and all those trailers and everything right. else when you can just watch it at home?
You like, pay 20 cares? Bucks, you watch it at home, you can pause it, you can do whatever. Yeah. Like, I mean, I get what you're saying, and I think the diehard cinephiles are going to keep going to the movies, but is anybody else? And that's kind of what scares me a little bit. I think the diehard
cinephiles are going to start to slowly ebb away too, because I have, there's been times when I haven't gone to the theater when I could have, and I was just like, you know what, like Kong v. Godzilla New Empire, whatever, that movie came out. Like, I really do want to check it out. I haven't really had the time. The time is more the issue than anything else. Yeah. But it's like, I know if I drive to the theater, like, even if I do go late, I'm still going to have to sit through some trailers and everything like that. the drive back and forth, the everything else. I'm like, nah, you know what? It's going to be out on digital anyway in a few weeks. I'll watch it then. Who cares?
Yeah, by the way, Monkey Man is out on digital, just to let you know if you want to catch that. Yeah,
Monkey Man. Look, Monkey Man's another one I missed last month. I want to watch.
Just came out. Yeah, that just came out a month ago, and it's already on demand. So it's happening more and more frequently. The window is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. You know, you have your event movies like Dune Part 2, which I know you weren't necessarily a fan of, but I love. But, I mean, those are like event IMAX, you know, your Oppenheimers, your Barbies. Like, I mean, but all, I think everything else is like the window is just shorter. Like, they're not, movie studios are not necessarily concerned with what are the box office dollars, but more so like box office plus streaming, you know, and they're kind of lumping them together now, and it's. It's just making it a weird experience for anybody that normally goes to the theater to see stuff when it comes out. So I'm always going to opt to do that, but I also see the benefits of not doing it. And I wouldn't fault anybody, you know, who has young kids or, I mean, whatever the reason may be for waiting 2 weeks to see it on streaming. I mean, why wouldn't you do that? You know, so it's sad, man.
I love the theatrical experience. Like, I really do. Yeah. Like, I'd rather watch a movie in a theater more than anything, but I mean,
I'm with
like,
you
at the end of the day, like the theatrical presenters, like these companies that like these major movie chains that are across the country and stuff, they've got to do better to improve the guest experience. Give me another reason to go to that theater aside from just a bigger screen and stuff like that. Give me another reason to show up.
Yeah. A lot of things, it just got thrown into a whirlwind with COVID, and everything's changed. I mean, it's just different. And, you know, movie going is another thing that can be lumped into that category. So I do think it's a shame, and I hope people will opt to go to the movies, but kind of like you said, they need to have a reason to do so, especially if they're not a diehard like you and I.
And studios need to market their movies better. We're going to talk more about this when we talk about The Fall Guy, but this movie, the trailer was garbage. It was so bad. I only went to see this because we are doing it on the show.
We'll get there, but before we do, Nick, we like to start out every review by seeing what the fans had to ask us in relation to the movie in some way, and what we call one big question.
You gotta ask yourself a question.
I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
How about this? Kayla McCoy, patron of the show, and she's actually such a dear, dear patron and friend of mine that I actually take her to screenings. She's going with me tomorrow night to see Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes early. So, hey, you know what? You can be a patron of the peas and go see movies with me. I don't know if that's a perk, but Kayla gets to benefit from that.
Like half of our patrons just unsubscribed. I just heard the clicks from here.
I've seen Gerald in person. Unsub. Ooh. All right. She says, Nick, I'm going to throw this over to you first. She says, what is a Tom Cruise level stunt that you would be willing to try for a movie?
A stunt?
Yeah. What kind of stunt? Oh, you're up for anything.
A stunt? Like
all these stunts. She says a Tom Cruise level. So, you know, he's driving off of cliffs and fucking jumping off a train. I mean, the guy's a psycho.
Hell yeah.
You do all that shit?
Stunts, especially like a movie stunt, like not now in real life, would I jump out of a plane and like in like skydive or like bungee jump or any of that kind of stuff? No. But in like a movie stunt sense that are very, very controlled and like they test things a million different times in terms of like their safety and stuff. Like Tom Cruise is never in any real. I mean, granted, they look cool. Like the stunts are badass and they're amazing. Don't get me wrong. Like,
did he break his leg jumping off of buildings or something like that? He did that recently.
He probably did. He might have. Yeah. And there's a little bit of risk that's involved if you're going to take that kind of thing on. But hell yeah. Hell yeah. Anything. A movie stunt? Yeah,
I want to answer her question. And I think it was Dead Reckoning that had this scene in it. And actually in The Fall Guy, too, in a different, not as grand of a scale. But I want to, like, hang from a helicopter. Like, the bars on the bottom of the helicopter and, like, fucking fall off, you know? Like, I'm falling to my death or whatever. And then I just land on a giant beanbag, you know? I kind of want to do something like that, I think. But aside from that, I'm good. I'm not trying to jump off of trains and all that.
Hell
shit.
Yeah, I'll do like a movie stunt, like in that controlled. Like, I mean, granted, there's variables and stuff like that. There's always a risk factor involved, but in that kind of environment where like they have so many safety specialists and so many experts that are constantly like all these different variables that they're trying to control and all these different safety measures that they're implementing. Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah, sign me up. I'd do anything.
Yeah. All right. Well, I didn't expect you to say that. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm proud of you, man. That's good stuff. Did you come up with any questions over there in Discord? Or
I'm going to give you this one from our good friend Jason Nerdivert said, Gerald, this one's for you. This is just for you.
Mm-hmm.
What would you have cut from this to get it down to a tight 90 minutes?
Oh, God, from the Fall Guy?
Yeah.
Well, I think that'll be part of the review. So can we put a pin in that? Because I don't want to give away any of my takes on the movie. But I think there were some subplots in this film that we didn't necessarily need.
Spoilers.
So hang tight, Jason and everyone else. But that'll come up a little bit in the review. So we'll put a pin in that. And I think I'll probably answer it throughout the conversation. But
I like it.
Guys, thanks so much for submitting the questions. As always, if you want to get involved, check the show notes, the Discord, the Facebook fan page, Patreon. Whatever you want to do to throw the questions at us, you can do so for one big question every week.
Thank you so much, everyone, for the questions. Thank you.
Nick, it is time to tell everyone what we thought of The Fall Guy, starring Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt, directed by a former stuntman, David Leitch, as well, by the way, which I thought was interesting. What happened to the sex cult Gerald behind you? What do you, the Gosling?
Oh, I'm sorry. What, do you want me to change it again?
No,
for
it's
you?
Okay. But he's actually been in my sex cult, so you can leave him up there. He's a patron of mine, so that's fine. All right. So let's talk about The Fall Guy. Before we get there, though, we like to start out every review by revealing our score to each other. We have not discussed it yet. Out of 10 on what we thought is what we call the early score reveal.
Damn it. This always happens. I think I'm going to score, and then I never score. It's not fair.
All right, our scores out of 10 for The Fall Guy. We have not discussed it yet. Nick, are you ready, man? Here we go.
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1.
I'm so tired of putting this card up. This is the third week in a row with an 8.
Oh, my God. Nick, let's tell everybody on the audio real quick.
I just said 8. Are you deaf?
You did? I didn't hear you. So I guess I am deaf. 8 from Nick and a 7 from me on The Fall Guy, which makes it a 7.5.
An 8 from me, guys. Did you hear that? 8.
I think Nick gave it an 8. I'm going to ask him later to get confirmation. So 7.5 cumulatively from the P's on The Fall Guy. Nick, you like movies again. What the fuck is going on here, brother? This is like what'd you say? It's 3 weeks in a row of the 8. Is that the only card you have? Go buy a new deck of cards. This
I don't
is
think
crazy.
It was the 8 of clubs every time.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
If we're being...
talk a little bit about it, man. I like this thing, too. I obviously have some problems with it. We're going to do a spoiler-free general thoughts, guys. Nick, what did you think of The Fall Guy here, man?
I mean, it's funny that you talked about in Spill the Peas. We talked about superhero news and things like that, because this movie is all about stunt people as superheroes, as action heroes. You know, the stunt people are basically taking center stage. This is David Leitch's love letter to his former profession. Bar none, point blank, period. The plot of this movie largely doesn't matter. It's just kind of a vehicle to showcase more really, really great stunt work. And that's like we talked a little bit before about this movie's marketing. I think if you marketed this movie as what this movie is, and that is a love letter to just stunt work in general in cinema, then I think audiences might have really cared a little bit more about this. Like if you just showcase more of those amazing stunts, all that kind of stuff in the trailers, and kept out the schmaltzy romance between Gosling and Blunt, like the plot's fine, but the plot's really just to get you to stunt set piece to stunt set piece to stunt set piece. And
I agree.
The stunt work in this movie, I mean, it's off the chain good. And like, if you somebody that really, really loves stunt work, then you're going to have an absolute blast with this thing. You know, I put all the other concerns about this movie out of mind because I was just enjoying all the stunt work so, so much. I just generally didn't really care about anything else going on.
Yeah. I that's kind of where I'm at almost step for step. I mean, my thing with this movie is that it shined so, so bright when it was focused on the stunt work and it was focused on the stunt man. And, you know, he's our primary character. And when we got Colt Seavers doing his thing in this movie as a stunt man, because it's a movie within a movie within a movie, you know, there's a lot of different sets going on and we're watching the movie that we're watching as well. But when he's doing his thing as a stuntman, yes. But then when he kind of takes on his stunt persona in the real world, trying to kind of, you know, aid in Emily Blunt's career and save the movie and that kind of stuff, he kind of puts all those things into play that he learned over the course of his stunt career. But my main I mean, we'll get into it a little bit deeper on the spoiler side, but my main issue, which I don't really have a ton of issues with this movie, I thought it was a lot of fun, was that we didn't need a lot of the melodramatic plot beats that weren't surrounding the stunt stuff. Like, this is a movie that showcases the stunt profession, and it's also a very important movie in timely in when it's happening, because in the last 2 or 3 years, everybody's been chattering, where's the stunt Oscar? Why don't we have an Oscar for stunt coordination? Why don't, you know, I mean, they're recognizing so many different things behind the scenes, but there's never been an Oscar for stunt guys. And it just seems like this movie is kind of a, hey, Academy, what the fuck are you doing? Like, look at what these guys are going through every day, rolling in car accidents and going through burning flames. And it, all of it is for our entertainment, for the public's entertainment. I mean, sure, they're getting paid, but I mean, this is not a easy profession. This is a very dangerous profession, high risk. And they're doing it to what we were talking about earlier, to help box office dollars. Because usually the grander the stunts are, you know, I mean, give or take a couple titles here and there, but the grander the stunts are, the more people are coming out to buy tickets and Blu-rays and whatever. So for me, if it's about that, and if it's about Colt Seavers and the stunt and the action set pieces, I loved it. 10 out of 10, great action, edge of my seat. Even the rom-com stuff was kind of funny. Like, I was even chuckling at some of the stupid jokes where he's crying while he's listening to the Taylor Swift song. And, you know, he's trying to remember his relationship with her. Like, that cheesy kind of, like, rom-com comedy. But there are times when this movie gets a little too serious that detaches away from that vibe. And for that reason, it brought it down a couple points for me. But this is not a bad review. By any means, it's a movie that I think you should see. And I'm not, people say this every single week on every single movie podcast that has ever existed, but you should see this in the theater. I mean, we were just talking about it, Nick. This movie is not going to be the same if you watch it at home. You might enjoy it, but I'm just telling you, it's not going to be the same experience, because David Leitch, as you said, a love letter to the stunt community. Obviously, these are big time stunts in this movie. Very, very much like a Tom Cruise Mission Impossible type deal, where if you saw that at home, you'd be like, oh, that's cool, but you're not going to like feel it. You know what I mean? You need to be in front of a big screen or an IMAX or something like that to feel it. So I love The Fall Guy. It had a couple, you know, narrative thematic issues for me that we'll get into in the spoilers. But generally speaking, I think you should seek this out if you're an action fan. And I liked it, man. When we come back, guys, we'll get into spoilers as we wrap up on The Fall Guy. Stick around. We will be right back.
Two Peas on a Podcast is made possible by our executive producers, Dan Brennick, Caleb Brownlee, Daniel Henderson, Michelle Dodo, Paul Prezula, Chris Yeaney, Julio Oliveira, Drew Hallam, Dan Roski, Jared Taylor, Michael Hill, Jason, David Powell, Joey Austin, Imran Javed, Kayla McCoy, Rebecca Lurch, Brett Parker, Justin Winters, Heidi England, and Brad Hargis. If you'd like access to bonus reviews, the ability to submit roulette wheel picks, and a litany of backlog content such as bonus top 10s, G-tunes, and My First Time, please consider going to patreon.com/twopeasonapod and contribute just as little as $1 to have access to everything.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Two Peas. We are talking about The Fall Guy. Now, going forward, anything we discuss will be spoiler-filled. If you have not seen the new movie The Fall Guy, then come back after you've seen it to listen to this segment of the review, as we're just going to talk willy-nilly, whatever we would like to talk about with this new action comedy here. Nick, you gave it a higher score than I did. Let's talk a little bit about the charisma and the draw of these leads. Now, Gosling, for me, is the next Brad Pitt. I mean, he is, I just feel like he can do no wrong, man. I saw this interview where he was talking about how he's been taking roles on the last few years based on what his kids and his family want. That's why he did Ken for Barbie. Because his daughter or whatever. And He's just not the kind of guy that's seeking a paycheck, or he's just kind of like himself, you know, and he's just a cool dude. And, you know, Brad Pitt's one of my favorite actors of all time, and I think they're very similar in that way. This was a very Gosling heavy film. Like, I thought his character, I guess I was expecting Emily Blunt to be a little more of like a kind of a twofer, you know? But I felt like it was really more him 75% and her kind of 25%. How did you feel about the performances here? If there's any even sub performances that you want to mention?
I think all the performances in the film were good enough. Like I said, I think everything that happens around the stunt work is fine. Mm-hmm. It's just a serviceable, you know, plot of they got to try to find out what the hell happened to Tom Ryder. Aaron Taylor Johnson's great in this movie too. Love him
He's
so much.
He's hilarious, man.
He's so good. I love him. Yeah. And like, you know, I've just really, really enjoyed all the performances and stuff, but none of that's why you're in the theater to buy a ticket for this. None of that's why you're in the theater watching this. And like I said, that's why the marketing is really a betrayal of this, because what was forward?
Yeah, talk a little bit about marketing? That. Yeah.
What was forward the most in the marketing? It was like the little love story between the two of them. Mm-hmm. Just tell me this is a love letter to stunt work. You're going to get more people out to the cinema to see it. I guarantee it. You know, it's really, really, really incredibly well done. And we're just in lockstep this week. Everything that happens in between the stunt action set pieces is just, it's just filler. You're just waiting to get to the next one. I love that they threw so many different great kind of action movie set pieces that you used to see in here. There's a boat jumping over like an exploding pier. There's a giant vehicle jump scene. There's all these different amazing fight scenes happening in the movie. There's just so many great different moments. And does Gosling have literally the charisma of 50,000 men? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's great. Sure. Emily Blunt is endlessly charming. They're really, really, they're great. They're fine. But I find the whole setup in the film, like, it kind of got off on the wrong foot with me, because it has him narrating different aspects of his life and like filling you in on backstory, just like quick throwing stuff in there that it doesn't really need to, which is really, really annoying to me. Mm-hmm. And like this idea that they would have gone their separate ways, like he would have like changed his number and everything like that, like this whole contrivance that he would have, I'm reflecting some of the real world onto this, Gerald.
Yeah,
John Krasinski's the luckiest man in the world, we already know.
Oh, without a doubt.
But like, who in their right mind is gonna have Emily Blunt as your plus one, or Jody Moreno in this case, her character in the movie, being who she is, and you're gonna change your number and ignore and pretend like she? I find that so difficult to buy. I mean, granted, he's Ryan Gosling and he is like literally chiseled from marble and has endless amounts of charisma and everything, so I mean, right, I get it, but it's almost just not believable that anyone would treat Emily Blunt that way. I don't know, like I found that so hard to get into.
I agree with you. And also a knock I kind of give the movie overall too is like her kind of lack of involvement in the story. Like, I don't know. And you mentioned the marketing and the trailers. Yeah, that surprised me. Like, I love Gosling, so that's okay. I mean, I don't care that he's front and center, but I don't know. She was just kind of a side character, really. And she kind of disappeared for a little bit of time in the movie. And then they kind of come back together when he goes to Australia and, you know, things kind of get turned up a little bit. But another thing for me, aside from that, like, there's like, I love Stephanie Hsu. I have a gigantic crush on her. I love her. She was in Everything Everywhere All at Once that won the Oscar for Best Picture a couple years ago. And she shows up here like barely at all. I knew she was in it, so I was really excited to see her, but she was only in a couple scenes.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, in other words, they were underused, in my opinion, those two characters, those two female leads there. But another thing that kind of disconnected me a little bit and maybe lost a point for me was because I was okay in between the stunt and the action with the comedic stuff. Like I mentioned the Taylor Swift scene, which any movie that has Taylor Swift licensed, you're in. I'm good with you.
Get a 10 out of you from there.
Yeah, I know. It was great. You know, and then there's that one scene where, you know, he's talking about how, you know, he's asking her if she wants to make out, and she's like, no. And he's like, I don't want to make out either. It's fine. I was just kidding, you know. But that's his charm kind of coming out there. The karaoke scene was great when Emily Blunt was performing that karaoke song, and they had the montage of him in the street kind of doing the stunt pieces while she was doing the karaoke, and he was trying to get to her, but he couldn't because, yeah, that was good shit back and forth there, Against All Odds, I think it was, by Phil Collins. So I love that kind of stuff. But then there's these scenes where it gets really serious, and Colt Seavers is like, you know, spilling his guts out. And I just couldn't connect to that stuff. Like, there's one scene where he's talking to her on the phone, and he's like, all the stunts I've done in my life, nothing has hurt me as much as not being able to say goodnight to you and hold you. I mean, just shit like that. I'm like, yeah. What? Like, we're turning into this, like, romance all of a sudden on an Italian countryside? I don't know. It just felt weird.
It leans so hard into the melodrama when it does those melodramatic bits. And it's not like at that point in the movie too, like they do a phone call earlier in the movie where it's this really cool, like, setup of this gimmick of a split screen where she's talking about whether or not she should use it in her movie. And they purposely do them split screen, like doing some of the same actions. They're mirrored.
Right.
And different things like that. Like, that was really, really clever.
That was cool.
But yeah, you're right. There's a lot of different elements of this movie where when they had to ratchet up to melodrama, they really, really cranked that lever as hard as they possibly could.
I was just kind of like, it's too cheesy for me,
especially at certain points in the movie. The stunt work is so good and the action set pieces are so good. By that point, by a certain point in this movie, like, we get through the awkward, like, kind of bumpy, stumbly, weird plot setup. Like, I didn't really like it. I didn't really care. Like, it kind of didn't start off on the right foot for me, so I had to kind of win me over. But eventually it did, with Gosling's charm and all the stunt work and stuff like that. But by the time you reach a certain point, you already know what you're in the theater to see. It doesn't really matter what else is going on. You're just witnessing. Like, I really loved the scene where she first finds out he's in Australia, and he has to do this stunt where he's lit on fire and then blows up and gets thrown into, like, this rock, and she keeps redoing it over and over. But, like, meanwhile, they're having this really ridiculously awkward, like, megaphone conversation back and forth about the plot of this script, which is essentially their plot, like, as people, and, like, all this stuff. It was so it didn't feel organic. It felt too forced. It felt too much like the film was trying too hard to be on the nose. Like, it was kind of trying to be tongue-in-cheek to set up these comedic scenes of, like, let's go again with this stunt piece and see him get his butt whipped by getting set on fire and thrown into this rock and stuff. Like, those bits were great, but the setup for it was just, we didn't need the back and forth with the megaphone, like the awkwardness and the ridiculousness of that whole thing.
I agree.
Like, and why is Metal Storm, which first of all is the dumbest name for a movie ever, absolutely stupidest name for a movie
ever.
It was
like a Mad Max kind of sci-fi. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was like Mad Max fused with, like, some, like, Independence Day, like some weird, silly, like, alien invasion movie, but also, yeah, it was super, super dumbest name for a movie ever, unless you're going to give it like a bitchin' metal soundtrack or something like that. But I don't like the plot of that in this movie. I don't like the melodrama of the love story in this movie. I surely wouldn't like it, like, even more. Like, that's the main crux of, like, the third act of Metal Storm, is whether these two characters are going to get together and save the galaxy or save the planet or whatever. And, like, I'm just like, this sounds like the shittiest sci-fi movie of all time. Like,
right.
I don't want to go. Yeah. I wouldn't want to go see this garbage, even though I loved the trailer that they did at the end of
it. Yeah, dude, we'll get into that here in a second. Cause
I love the trailer that they did at the end.
There were a couple cool cameos towards the end of the film. Hannah Waddingham is our kind of main baddie that's revealed. She's gained popularity in the last few years from Ted Lasso on that TV show. But as Gale, the producer of the film in this movie.
Slimy producer.
I mean, you saw that coming, right? I mean, that's just me, right? Like, literally the first scene she was in, I was like, she's going to end up being part of the problem. I mean, I wasn't shocked at all.
I didn't care enough about the plot.
I don't either. Yeah, that's the problem.
I just didn't care enough.
I knew she was going to be, you know, part of one of the bad guys. I didn't see the thing coming with Aaron Taylor Johnson and the deep fake and all that stuff. But again, we didn't need all that stuff. Like, that's not what this movie is about. It's not about plot twist and whodunits and all that. It's about the stunts.
And that's the weird thing, that the script goes kind of quote unquote so hard to try to deliver those moments to you, but ultimately you're just like, yeah, who cares?
Yeah, sure.
Like, yeah, great. The script seemed like they did so good on the stunt portion of this, and it just seems like the script itself was just,
they tried to fill in the blanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they started from the stunt work and worked backwards almost to write the plot beats that lead up to the action set pieces. I don't even know. Like, I simplify it, guys. Like, it didn't need to be that silly and ridiculous. Yeah,
you can just have a dumb action movie with two A-list stars in it. Like, you don't need these weird melodramatic plots.
It can be the silliest thing. Like, you didn't need the whole him. Like, what was the thing of Tom Ryder, that's Alan Taylor Johnson's character, like being the one that was responsible for Colt's fall at the beginning of the movie, like getting hurt.
Yeah, that was a plot twist that we didn't need.
So pointless, so needless. And I'm just like, we didn't need any of that opening. Like,
we already don't like Aaron Taylor Johnson's character. We already think he's a pretentious douchebag, kind of like the, you know, movie star, whatever. So we already don't like him. So why are you throwing that? It doesn't matter. Like, it could have just been an accident. That he almost broke his back or whatever. Like, we don't need some kind of weird. But what was the thing with the stunt double that replaced Colt was dead in the bathtub? Because, you know, he's the one that died in the video or whatever. We don't find that out till later. But anyway, he's dead in the bathtub and on ice. And you're talking about contrivances. Ryan Gosling rushes out of that hotel room to get somebody to tell them there's a dead body in the thing. He calls 911. He gets the hotel security. So what, maybe 5 or 10 minutes have passed and he goes back to the room and it's completely, all the ice is gone and the body's gone?
It's literally like 5 minutes. It's literally like, 5 minutes, yeah.
So at first glance, I was like, oh, well, he was hallucinating because of the unicorn and all that shit. So I'm like, oh, well, it wasn't really there.
That was funny because he was on drugs and there was just this random unicorn in most of the shots. Just, it wasn't doing anything. It was just literally standing there, which was,
yeah, that was
hilarious.
Funny.
And there's also a kind of thing like that I wanted to bring up too, where there is a little bit of a tonal inconsistency at different parts of the movie. Yeah. You've mentioned it too, with how it leans too hard into the melodrama and stuff too. But yeah, like when you have him on drugs and then like you have that whole fight scene in the club with the drug dealer where he's wearing like this whole neon suit and like doing all these stunts. But then there's all these like, think of like Scott Pilgrim-esque kind of like effects going off, like fireworks when he's landing punches and all these kind of different things. It's like really cool. It's like, oh man, if the whole movie is this, it's like it would be even cooler. Like, I really loved that. But then that was the only scene they really leaned into that really hard on, and then it kind of went away, you know.
I think this would be a hard movie to not enjoy, like on some level, you know, especially seeing it on the big screen. But there are problems that you're going to be able to pick out from it, and that's kind of what we're doing. But I mean, at the end of the day, this is a fun ride. I mean, this is a good time. It like is carried heavily. I mean, heavily, like 80-85% for me from an enjoyment perspective, from the action and the stunt work. And I think David Leitch's involvement, being a stuntman, and the lack of kind of like stunt appreciation in the Hollywood community, especially, it's been amplified in the last few years. This is the reason why this movie exists, and I hope at the very least that it's kind of a slap in the face to the people on the top floor that are watching this kind of stuff. Like, why are we not recognizing these guys that are setting themselves on fire and jumping out of buildings? And I mean, it just seems crazy to me. I'm not saying that, you know, stunt work is necessarily more important than like costume design or production design. I mean, they're all equally important in the enjoyment and creation of the film, but why are we leaving one of them out? You know, it just seems really, really strange to me. I feel like this is a pivotal piece in any movie that features any kind of action set piece in any way. And I hope that The Fall Guy, even though some people are kind of mid on it, does kind of highlight that. And we kind of get to a place where we can start to recognize these people that are doing these kinds of things. What did you think of, before we wrap up, I don't want to fail to forget to mention or ask you about the cameos. You kind of touched on one of them in Metal Storm.
The trailer for Metal Storm at the end with Jason Momoa is like, so it's good. It's like, because he's just leaning into it and being Jason Momoa.
So and good.
That was great. Even though, like I said, the plot of Metal Storm the movie is like dumb as hell. It's like, oh my god.
So Jason Momoa, they recast it because what's Aaron Taylor Johnson's character's name?
Tom Ryder.
So he, you know, blows up essentially. So he's dead.
It was so funny.
And was guilty of whatever. So they recast it, kind of like a Kevin Spacey type deal. And they put in Jason Momoa, so they, you know, he shoots all the scenes, and they have a trailer they cut together, like a fake trailer with him. And that, I thought that was fucking awesome. It was perfect. And they had actually given a little nod earlier in the movie that I didn't think meant anything, but there was a post-it note in his house, in Tom Ryder's house, that had Jason Momoa's like phone number on it. I don't know if you caught that.
No, it was a post-it note that said, "Is it Momoa or Mamoa?" Like, it didn't. He didn't know how to pronounce his last name.
That's right. Yeah. And at the time, I'm like, whatever. Well, that's stupid. But then it kind of comes back around.
A throwaway little reference to that
callback. Yeah,
it was like really cool. Yeah.
So Lee Majors shows up in the mid-credit scene. Did you stick around for the mid-credit scene? So Lee Majors, who played the Fall Guy, Colt Seavers, in the 80s TV show, which I watched as a very young kid and barely remember, showed up as one of the police officers in that mid-credit scene, which I thought was cool. They incorporated him. And
here's one thing I want from people listening to this on social media. Go on social media right now, wherever this episode is posted, and tell me if you ever even had a clue that this was based on a TV show before you walked into the theater or before you saw it on social media, because I had no idea.
No, they didn't promote it that way. And the only reason I found out after I looked it up, but when it was called The Fall Guy, I was like, oh, I wonder if that's The Fall Guy, you know, from the 80s. And when I Googled it, I found out that it was loosely based on The Fall Guy TV show. And it's the same characters and stuff like that. So in the TV show, from what I recall, Colt Seavers is a stuntman. And he's a bounty hunter at the same time. That's like his, I guess, second job. So he's a bounty hunter full time, and then he does stunt work part time. But he uses his skills from his stunt work to help him be a bounty hunter.
That movie would have been way cooler than this.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
What?
So my dad used to watch that when I was
five now.
When I was a young kid. So, all right. Well, look, I think we're both saying that we recommend The Fall Guy. I mean, it's a good time. It has some issues. It's a little long.
Just go enjoy. No, it's not too long, and I'll tell you why.
It is too long.
It is 2+ hour love letter to
it's Hollywood too long, Nick, because they need to take out the melodrama phone calls. That's why it's too long. We don't need that shit.
Just ignore those. And, you know, enjoy the absolute love letter to stunt work, to practical effects work. I'll tell you what the best part of this movie is after it ends, the whole credits, pretty much up until the mid-credits scene or whatever, is the scenes behind the scenes of like them filming the stunts that are being filmed as part of this movie within the movie. I mean, the setup to do that has to be insane. And just watching them do all those stunts and how they pulled all of them off is just, I love watching that stuff more than anything else.
And what's cool too is the movie does that scene at the end where they're trying to get Tom Ryder and Gail and kind of bring them down on the set of the movie. So they do that thing where they're in real life trying to beat the bad guys, but they're doing it with stunt pieces that they have on the set.
Yep.
So as they're like having the car chase in the sand, they're like blowing mines up and shit. And this one dude's like, man, I love my job, because he's like flipping cars over. So it's stuff that they would have done as stunts in movies that they're doing in the movie for us to capture the bad guys. So it's a very meta movie in that way, when you look at the stunt work and what goes into stunts in film. And I think it's a good time, man. I think I'm going to disagree with you. It could have easily been shaved 10 or 15 minutes. We don't need all the melodramatic phone calls. I love you. I want to hold you tonight. Like, we don't need all that shit. And that's to answer Nerdrovert's question too. If you take out 10 minutes or so, probably an 8 out of 10 for me, but as it stands, it was a 7 for me, an 8 from Nick, 7.5 overall on The Fall Guy. Nick, you are on a fucking roll, dude. You are like triple eights the last few weeks. You got Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes coming up.
It scares me. And then with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes on the horizon, like, man, it's going to have to work hard for me to not like it. I'm such a huge fan of the original trilogy. I
no
adore
Caesar,
it.
Though, right? No Caesar. So.
Well, no Caesar. So we're like 300 or so years in the future from the time of Caesar. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they go with the movie, and especially since this is supposed to be like the planned part one and like another trilogy, which I still think it would be really cool if they, I think like long time ago, I think they talked about, because there's the Easter egg in Rise of the Planet of the Apes of the spaceship going missing, like the mission to Mars going missing. And they put it in there kind of originally just as like almost a nod to like the original Planet of the Apes, right? But like, one of them, I forget who it is, like either one of the writers or something like that, mentioned in the press like how cool it would be like to like get to be able to remake the original movie like way down the road, like as part of this. And I think that would be really, really cool if they actually ended up doing that. Like, think about that. Like, it's like you've had all this time to get to know all these ape characters, ape protagonists and stuff like that, and then you bring, you know, humans that can walk and talk and are really meant to kind of be us in a way in that perspective back into it, like in the original, in the OG. But yeah, I am so excited for it. I'm going to see it Thursday when it opens here. I literally cannot wait for it. I'm beyond excited for it. And
I'll be seated doing an early screening of it tomorrow. We'll be talking about it on next week's show, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Can't wait.
We did just cover Rise of the Planet of the Apes a couple weeks ago on the show. You can go back and listen to our review of that. We both love that movie and big fans of the trilogy and looking forward to Kingdom as well. And then I believe the week after that, we'll be airing our first ever movie draft for Two Peas.
That's right.
With our boy Justin Winters, who joined us from So I Marry a Movie Geek days, where he used to do the movie drafts all the time. And he missed it, so we had to get him out of retirement to come on with us. And we did a 1994 movie draft. By the way, Nick.
Gerald cheated.
I talked to the 80s champ, Jay Ledbetter, and I don't want to tease anything too much here, I think he might be on the mic with us in June whenever. Oh, by the way, you got to come up with a topic for the next movie draft. So,
my good Lord, I'm so scared. He's got the title belt and everything. He won the whole 80s tournament, I think, didn't he?
No, he did. Yeah. So stay away from the 80s when you pick your topic. Man. But so Nick will be picking the next one. But our first ever movie draft for 1994 will be coming up in a couple weeks after our Kingdom.
Cheated.
The Planet of the Apes. Gerald cheated. All right, Nick.
Guys, I tried real hard, by the way. Y'all know the like system of the categories Gerald tried to bring into this thing.
That's
I tried
go
real
away.
Hard to break it.
You did. It's going to go away. You can't do it. I mean, I have to cater to you. And, you know, I mean, if we're still doing this show.
Not having seen enough movies is going to come back as a benefit.
If we're still doing this show in 10 or 15 years, and I'll bring the categories back because you'll have seen, you know, arguably 52 movies
more,
a year.
One or two more movies, maybe.
All right, Nick, have a good one, man. And don't forget, guys, check the show notes for live stream for The Cure.
It's coming.
We will be talking about it every week on the show leading up to the event, but it's May 29th. Make sure you guys are a part of it, and we hope you can tune in for that and donate if you can. But we'll be happy to have you share the event and be a part of it. Nick, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes next week, buddy. Let's be there.
Apes together, strong.